Well, thanks for being with us to celebrate Easter, and that song says it all. Heaven roared that 2,000 years ago, death was defeated. Heaven roared that God had come to earth and ultimately to step out of the grave. And if you're like me, when you think of a grave, I think of a hole in the ground, right, where we put a casket. But in Jesus' day, a grave was a lot more like a cave. It would be an area carved out of a rock that you'd walk into, and a big rock would be in front of it to seal it. I don't know if you've done much caving before. We did a lot of caving as kids and as adults. And the thing about walking into a cave is the minute you step inside, you can hear the echo, can't you? Hello, 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 hello. I remember visiting my daughter in college. She was like a junior at the time, and we had a couple hours to kill. I said, hey, I see in Missouri they have some caves we could explore. How about we go check that out? And so we did. We get down, we're exploring the caves. We can hear our whispers bouncing around on all the walls. Beautiful lights, the stalactites and stalagmites. We make our way to the very back of the cave. They say, in just a moment, we're going to turn off all the lights. No exit sign, no safety lights. It's going to be completely pitch black. Then he says, and if some of you want to turn off your flash, you can take a picture of pure blackness. Several people pulled out their camera and took a picture of complete blackness. He says, are you ready? All right, you ready, honey? 3, 2, 1. Pitch black. Could not see your hand in front of you. I could feel my daughter reach out and grab my hand. I'm here. That's what it felt like when Jesus was crucified, his body placed in utter and complete darkness. And in that moment, the God of heaven, his heavenly Father, reached his hand down, placed it on his son, and he said, I'm here. Here. Get up. Wake up. Arise. And in that moment, Jesus stepped off that tomb and out of that grave, and he came out, and what happened will ricochet through time and space. Easter echoes from an empty tomb to a distant shore. What began in southern Israel will travel that news up to northern Israel. It'll travel across the European continent, go across the Atlantic Ocean, and here we are today as an example of how that echo just continues. It continues south into Africa, across the Indies, across to Russia and China. That message reverberated everywhere. Death had been defeated, and that is why we celebrate with millions of people today what happened that day in that tomb. So what do you do if you've just defeated death? Like, what's next on your bucket list, right? Well, like, what do you do next after you've gone toe-to-toe with the Grim Reaper and won? I'm going to show you exactly what Jesus did, because it tells us so much about who he is. Having just defeated death, we find three echoes in our story. The first echo is we see he is a God who pursues. God doesn't wait for us to pursue him. No, he is a God who pursued us by coming to earth. And we're going to see, even after defeating death, he's still pursuing every one of us. The story begins in John chapter 21. It says, after these things, he's raised from the dead, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. Now, Tiberias is another name for the Sea of Galilee. And this is the way he showed himself. Now, Simon Peter had said to them, I'm going fishing. Now, that's significant. Peter was supposed to be the leader of this movement. He promised, I will never deny you. And when Jesus needed him most, he denied him 3 times, even cursed his name. He feels like I've been a failure. I didn't live up to all my promises. He's going to go back to his old way of life of fishing. So he travels back to his hometown, to his own lifestyle. Now, Jesus pursues him. In fact, Jesus still stands on the shore. And the disciples did not know it was him. Jesus isn't out in the desert. He's here amongst the lilies and amongst the vegetation on the side of the Sea of Galilee. When he sees his disciples, he's pursued them here. And the verse says that this is the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. An echo of what he's already done. Guys, I'm alive. It's exactly what I predicted. First time. Second time. Guys, I'm alive. Guys, I'm alive. Look at my wounds. It's me. I'm not a ghost. I can eat fish and honeycomb with this new body. And now this third time, the echo, I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive. And let me show you how far he's pursued them. Let me show you on a map. Jesus was raised from the dead here in a tomb in Jerusalem. They have traveled, the disciples, way up here to northern Israel to the Sea of Galilee, their hometown where he first met them. We're done. We're out of here. Back to our old life. We have been utter failures. We fell on our face. We all, except for John, abandoned him when he needed us most. Jesus is going to pursue them in his brand new body. Having just defeated death, he's walking along these roads to chase after his friends. To tell them, I'm the kind of God who pursues those even who fall on their face. I want you to know this was part of the plan for me to defeat death. I want you to know that I want to have a relationship with you. There's an award-winning writer. His name's Ernest Becker. He says, the greatest fear we all have is death as human beings. He says it this way. The irony of man's condition is that the deepest need we have is to be free of the anxiety of death and annihilation. But it's life itself that awakens it. I wouldn't have my greatest fear if I wasn't alive, but now that I'm alive, my greatest fear is to not have life. There's something we all have. Is there any way to not be annihilated, not to not exist? Is there any way that death doesn't have to be the final chapter? And Jesus says, yes, that's why I came, to defeat death. He wants to tell his disciples, I want everyone to know that their greatest fear can be dealt with. I am pursuing them. You know, my daughter had our first grandchild. Her name's Jubilee, and she turned one this week. And so we FaceTime with Jubilee probably three or four times a week, my wife and I. And so we get on the phone, and my wife goes by Gramby, and I go by Funpa, because I'm too young to be a grandpa. That was not a laugh line, people. So Jubilee will recognize our voices, and she'll see us. And suddenly she'll recognize, oh, it's Grandpa, it's Funpa, and it's Gramby. And all of a sudden she'll grab the phone from my daughter, and we can just see the camera goes directly at her lips. She is going to give us a big granddaughter kiss. But then she wants to snuggle with us. And so all we see on the other side of the camera is, whoa, whoa, we're seeing all of the room as we're being hugged on by this thing. And every time this pure, innocent, pursuing love from our granddaughter, we get off the phone a half hour, an hour later, and my wife always says the same thing. When are we going there next? Right? You want to be near pure love. You want to be near that kind of unconditional love. And that's what Jesus is doing. He's pursuing so they will draw near. The second echo we see is the echo of reconciliation. There's been a distance between them and God. Maybe you felt that. Maybe because you failed, or maybe you've just ignored God for a long time. Imagine the God who made you, created you, and for the most part, you haven't prioritized him for 2, 10, 20 years. Think how painful that would be to be ignored for that long. Yet Jesus says, I want to close the distance despite what's happened and what you've done. I want to close the distance. I want to reconcile. So he's come all the way up to the Sea of Galilee. He's made a little fire. And here in the fire, he looks out, and all his disciples have been fishing. They're career fishermen, most of them. This is what they're good at. And they have spent all night catching nothing. And if you're a fisherman who spent all day fishing, what's the one question, and you didn't catch anything, what's the one question you don't want to be asked? Did you catch anything? No. It's exactly the question Jesus asks. Hey, children, have you any food? And if you've ever been on the lake, I love the lake, your whispers echo across the water. You can just whisper and it just carries across the water. Do you have any food? No. They have to admit that their best efforts are not bringing them the purpose they thought they could have. It's not fixing the real problem. What they really need is reconciliation, not their own best efforts and their old way of life. Did you know that God wants to reconcile with everybody, but he knows you by name and wants to reconcile with you personally? He mentions Peter's name several times. You know, Peter's been beating himself up after cursing his name. But go, tell the disciples and Peter, make sure Peter knows that he's raised from the dead. He was buried, Jesus was. He rose again on the third day, according to the scriptures. This was predicted hundreds of years in advance. And then he was seen specifically by Cephas, known as Peter, and then by the 12. Jesus wants to reconcile with you by name. So he looks out in the water about 200 yards out. You can see their boat. So he yells out, cast your net on the right side of the boat. Now, if you're a fisherman and you've been fishing all night, you're thinking, right. That's it. Of course, the fish aren't here. They're here. Why didn't I think of that? Right? It's ridiculous. But they cast their net out on his word, and they're not able to draw in because of the multitude of fish. Therefore, the disciple Jesus loved, that was John, he had a real anger problem. He loved how Jesus loved him despite his anger problem. He says, it is the Lord right there. Peter, hearing it is the Lord, plunged into the sea. He wants to close the distance. God has come 70 miles from me. I'm going to swim that last 100 yards for him. Now, the rest of the disciples took a little longer to come in the little boat because they're dragging this net full of fish with them. And as soon as they all arrived in land, they saw a fire of coals there. Jesus in his resurrected body is making breakfast. And for breakfast, they're having fish and bread. Now, this too is an echo. Last time they were all together, they had a meal, the Last Supper, where he said, I've come to forgive you, just like the Passover lamb. I've come to forgive you. That's what I'm going to die for. What does he mean die? Now they get it. He's having another feast of reconciliation here, only this time intimate and small. Guys, fish and bread, does that ring a bell? One of his most known miracles is when he took fish and bread and fed 5,000 people. Big miracle, big crowd. But now it's a small miracle. It's a small moment, really. Guys, I want to reconcile with you with fish and bread. It's an echo of what happened when they were with him. Something powerfully happens when you come face to face with someone wanting to reconcile with you. Remember years ago, I was a video production major in college, as well as pastoral ministry. So I had a little video business I ran. My friend Neil owned this huge corporate event farm that he bought and developed into safari animals and ducks and fishing and trains and all kinds of crazy stuff. And he'd invite corporate clients to come out with their families. Sony would have all their employees out there and families, and he hired me to do some videos. Now, Neil was the kind of guy who was a classic salesman. He could paint a beautiful picture of what you wanted to buy, but he didn't always communicate real well in the details. Well, the next day at church, after this event that I had shot, I could tell he was angry at me. He saw me and quickly went the other way. Like, what happened? There's a wedge between us. So I drove out to his farm. He lived right there on the farm, 15 yards from lions is where he lived. I knock on the door, hope he doesn't throw me to the lions. And as I open the door, he sees me and immediately his jaw tightens, his shoulders go back. What do you want? I said, man, it seems like there's something come between us. First, I want to let you know, I finished the video project. Here it is. You did it? I didn't see you. Well, you were kind of busy with other stuff. I was shooting it. Oh, I didn't know you did it. Well, clearly this is a miscommunication between us. I want you to know, I don't want any money for this project because our friendship means more to me than this deal. His jaw loosened. His shoulders kind of went down. Oh, I didn't realize. And our friendship grew that day. It was about a year later that our church needed a place to meet. And he said, why don't you just use my farm for as many weeks as you want for the church? You see, when someone's willing to prioritize relationship and pay a cost for it, it speaks to you. It says something to you. And Jesus said, I so wanted relationship with you. I paid the ultimate cost. I died on a cross so that we could be reconciled, be in friendship together. Which brings us to the third echo. He doesn't just want to reconcile with us. He wants to restore us. He had a purpose, a plan for Peter's life. I want you to know my plan for your life. So this whole scene that we're looking at is actually an echo of exactly what happened 3 years earlier when he first called them. At the Sea of Galilee, at this area of the earth, right here. He meets them. He saw them doing this very thing 3 years ago. See if you notice all the patterns. We're going to jump back in time 3 years. Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. Simon answered and said to him, Master, we've toiled all night and we've caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, we'll let down the nets. And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. And Jesus said to them, Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you're not just catching fish. You're going to be catching men, influencing others, helping others find their purpose. It's beat for beat an echo of exactly what happened 3 years earlier. They finish breakfast, and he says, Peter, come here, man to man, mano a mano, let's have a chat. And as they're chatting together, he's going to ask him one question. It's going to echo three times. Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? First time, yes, Lord, you know I love you. Great, then feed my lambs. My people like you, they wander off sometimes. They go the wrong way. Feed the little ones. Help people find their way in this broken world. Second time, do you love me? Do you love me? Lord, you know I do. You know I love you. No, he doesn't say, do you promise to never make mistakes? He doesn't promise, are you really going to be perfect this time? I want to know that you love me. I want a loving relationship. Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Great. Then I want you to tend my sheep. Those lambs are going to grow into sheep. I want you to tend them, guard them, show them how to live life, how to turn, how to twist, how to go the right way. Do unto them what I'm doing to you. Then he comes to him a third time. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? At this, Peter was grieved because he said this a third time. Do you love me? And he said, Lord, you know all things. One thing I can tell you is I love you. Great, then feed my sheep. As those lambs grow into sheep, they need tended, they also need fed. And I want you to feed them the same thing I'm feeding you. Grace, forgiveness, reconciliation, and guidance. Not because you lived a perfect life, but the opposite. You know what it's like to fail, to not live up to your own standards. I want the whole world to know I defeated death, and I want to restore them to their purpose. Feed my sheep. That is why this message of Easter has spread through all of history. That's why people are gathered today to celebrate, because we all know the power of being restored after we fall. We all desire to know death can be defeated. And did you know, for Horizon, this is a very special day for us, not just because it's Easter, but because it was Easter 25 years ago that we had our first public service. 25 years ago, a group of friends had been practicing church for 2 years. They didn't do advertising campaigns or billboards. They wrote personal handwritten notes to people they'd known for 10, 20 years and said, hey, we've had some good spiritual conversations. I think this might be the type of church that you could explore your questions and dig deeper and connect. So we gathered together with a big welcome sign, welcome people in, been practicing for 2 years. People were praying during that time, praying as they sent out those notes, trying to figure out how we'd do children's ministry, what it would look like, praying backstage, help us do the music that will really draw people toward God. We're meeting at Cincinnati Country Day back then. Like I said, we've been meeting for 2 years. You could have, if you're part of the original group, want to be part of that. You would have seen the Christmas stages and the things getting ready, but we weren't quite open to the public yet. But on Easter, 25 years ago, we had this desire to comfortably connect people to God through the Bible and a community of growing Christ followers. In fact, hanging in our office to this day is this right here. This is the original program from 25 years ago. Our original logo, our original address and phone number, people you could meet, phone calls you can make, groups you could get in, ways you could connect. And then even promoted, don't just learn Jesus defeated death for you, how do you find his purpose for your life, the next series? And we did the same thing today. If you look in your program, you'll see the Maestro series, where we're going to, for the next 6 weeks at 11 o'clock, we're going to look at how God is the great composer of your life. He wants to compose purpose into your life. If you love our band's going to be there. Plus, we're going to have some classical musicians doing Beethoven and Bach and Chopin. We're actually going to have harps on stage. We're going to have cellos and violins on stage and show how classical music gives us a window to how God's trying to bring joy into the dissonance. He's trying to bring a rhythm to our life, a purpose. The same thing he did here with Peter. And who would have thought 25 years ago that you would keep inviting your friends? And you'd find purpose, you'd find marriage being built up and changed, and you want to tell others, your kids would invite their friends. So we announced just about a month ago that because so many of you are inviting your friends, we're actually going to retire our tent and put in a four-season solarium glass structure out there. And that's going to be a space that we can continue to have comfortable space, bring in all the beauty of creation while people are experiencing and growing spiritually. We also announced that we're going to be engaging with architects to expand our facility to have more room. We know even getting tickets for these things for you and your friends was hard because we need more space at the optimal inviting hours. So we're engaging architects right now because we, like we did 25 years ago, want our friends to find what we found, a God who defeated death, a God who pursues us, wants to reconcile with us, and wants to restore us to our original purpose. So how do you respond to the message of Easter? Well, the same thing I did in that cave. You come into that cave, and you see in that cave the rags there, that his blood was spilled for you. You say, wow, he paid a cost to reconcile with me. Oh my goodness, I can't believe he did that for me. Then you poke your head in the cave, and you simply call out his name. You see there's no body there. You call out his name in the empty tomb. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. I believe. Believe, believe. Forgive me. Me, me. But the echo you hear back is not your own voice. Instead, you hear an echo of reconciliation. God says, I walked 70 miles. All I need you to do is swim the last 100 yards. And like Peter coming up out of the water with so much regret and so much shame, and Jesus doesn't put his face in it, he wraps his arms around him and says, I love you. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, I do. I want to restore you, and I have a plan for your life. And Peter will go on to change the world by talking about this God who defeated death. Do you need some reconciliation in your life, some restoration to purpose? Let me lead you in a prayer. It's just a way you can respond to God in prayer. Say something like this in your own words. Say, God, thank you for Jesus dying for me. Thank you for defeating death for me. I believe. I need reconciliation. I love you for what you've done for me. In Jesus' name, amen.